We turn to the book of Nehemiah and chapter 2. And it came to pass in the month of Nisan, in the 20th year of King Artaxerxes, when wine was before him, that I took the wine and gave it to the king. Now I had never been sad in his presence before. And therefore the king said to me, "Why is your face sad, since you are not sick? This is nothing but sorrow of heart." So I became dreadfully afraid, and said to the king, "May the king live forever. Why should my face not be sad, when the city, the place of my father's tombs, lies waste, and its gates are burned with fire?" And then the king said to me, "What do you request?" So I prayed to the God of heaven. And I said to the king, "If it pleases the king, and if your servant has found favor in your sight, I ask that you send me to Judah, to the city of my father's tombs, that I may rebuild it." Then the king said to me, the queen also sitting beside him, "How long will your journey be, and when will you return?" So it pleased the king to send me, and I set him a time. Furthermore, I said to the king, "If it pleases the king, let letters be given to me for the governors of the region beyond the river, that they must permit me to pass through till I come to Judah, and a letter to Asaph, the keeper of the king's forest, that he must give me timber to make beams for the gates of the citadel, which pertains to the temple, for the city wall, and for the house that I will occupy." And the king granted them to me, according to the good hand of my God upon me. Then I went to the governors in the region beyond the river, and I gave them the king's letters. Now the king had sent captains of the army and horsemen with me. And when Sanballat the Horonite and Tobiah the Ammonite, the official, heard of it, they were deeply disturbed that a man had come to seek the well-being of the children of Israel. So I came to Jerusalem and was there 3 days. Then I arose in the night, I and a few men with me. I told no one what my God had put in my heart to do at Jerusalem. Nor was there any animal with me, except the one on which I rode. And I went out by night through the valley gate to the serpent well, and the refuse gate, and viewed the walls of Jerusalem, which were broken down, and its gates, which were burned with fire. Then I went on to the fountain gate, and to the king's pool, but there was no room for the animal under me to pass. So I went up in the night, and in the valley, and viewed the wall. Then I turned back and entered the valley gate, and so returned. And the officials did not know where I had gone, or what I had done. I had not yet told the Jews, the priests, the nobles, the officials, or the others who did the work. Then I said to them, "You see the distress that we are in, how Jerusalem lies waste, and its gate waste, and its gates are burned with fire. Come and let us build the wall of Jerusalem, that we may no longer be of a reproach." And I told them of the hand of my God which had been good upon me, and also of the king's words that he had spoken to me. And so they said, "Let us rise up and build." Then they set their hands to do this good work. But when Sanballat the Horonite and Tobiah the Ammonite official and Geshem the Arab heard of it, they laughed at us and despised us and said, "What is this thing that you are doing? Will you rebel against the king?" So I answered them and said to them, "The God of heaven himself will prosper us. Therefore we, his servants, will arise and build. But you have no heritage or right or a memorial in Jerusalem." So we leave the reading of God's holy word at that point. And we're just doing a short series at the moment on the example of Nehemiah. Leadership, God's way, and the testimony of Nehemiah has served to be an inspiration for the church over many, many centuries. And we saw in our first study something of Nehemiah's inspiration. Nehemiah's inspiration stemmed from the highest regard and respect for God. He spoke of God in an awesome way, in a reverent way. "O Lord God of heaven, the great and terrible God, thou hast redeemed us by thy great power and by thy strong hand. Blessed be thy glorious name, which is exalted above all blessing and praise. He speaks of the greatness of the mercy of God. Although Nehemiah had a profound and deep respect for God, he also had a very personal relationship with God. And he speaks of my God. My God had put it in my heart. The hand of my God was good to me. So therefore, we can see Nehemiah's inspiration he had the highest estimation of the eternal God, the only true and living God, but he also had a personal relationship with God. He could speak of him by faith as my God. Secondly, we moved on in our second point to Nehemiah's burden. We realize that when Nehemiah heard of the devastation in Jerusalem, he was living a very influential, high-class standard of living in the palace. He was the king's cupbearer. He was very close to the king. He had no money worries. He had no providential concerns. He was in a very high position. But because he was one of the Lord's, when he heard of the Lord's people in trouble and the Lord's name being dishonored, it became a serious burden to him. And he realized the messianic significance of Jerusalem. And it made him very sad. And we read here in Nehemiah 2 how he was sad in front of the king. And in the culture of that day, if you were sad in front of the king, it normally meant death. You always had to be happy in front of the king. You always had to be smiling in front of the king. You always had to be a positive man in front of the king. But Nehemiah didn't feel positive. He didn't feel happy. He didn't feel joyful. And for him, mourning because of the dishonor on the name of the Lord, mourning for the sake of his brothers and sisters in the Lord, was actually much more important to him than putting on a smiley face to keep the king happy. And the Lord overruled that, and the king saw that he was genuine, and he told him the problem. And we then moved on to our third point, whereupon we began to see Nehemiah's wisdom. And the first point we saw as regards Nehemiah's wisdom was that he was a praying man. And we've read here, even in this chapter, in chapter 2, verse 4, when the king said, "What do you request?" The first response of Nehemiah was, "I pray to the God of heaven." I prayed. This was the first port of call. This was an opportunity, and this man of God prayed. Prayer was an important principle for Nehemiah. Prayer for Nehemiah was as important in the palace as outside of the palace. Later, when facing danger, he prayed, "Now therefore, O God, strengthen my hand." So he unashamedly testifies in his testimony to his dependence upon God through prayer. He really appreciated the value of prayer in service for the Lord. But now we move on now to see some more characteristics of Nehemiah's wisdom. If we are going to be a man of God who is leading God's way, then we need to look at these men of God and to find out some of the most remarkable characteristics and the gifts that God had given to them. And we have seen then that Nehemiah was a man of prayer. But secondly, in his wisdom, he was a thoughtful man. He didn't shoot from the hip. Nehemiah's response to the news about Jerusalem serves as a vital guide for wise leadership. There was no unwise, knee-jerk reaction without thought or prayer. His first reaction was to sit down, was to contemplate the situation. His sincere thoughtfulness for the cause of God's people is evidence in his sorrowing, in his fasting, in his prayer. The first thing he did when he heard this devastated news about the distress in Jerusalem was he himself mourned. He himself became part of that burden. And he went to prayer. And he thought about the situation. But in thinking about the situation, he did so intercessory prayer, in praying unto God. So we understand here that Nehemiah was not only a praying man, he was a thoughtful man. And one of the signs of a wise man is that they don't answer very quickly. They tend to think before they respond. It could not be said that Nehemiah's heart ruled his head. And it's very interesting to note that when he arrived in Jerusalem, he again shows his thoughtfulness by first spending time confidentially assessing the situation for himself. So when he came to Jerusalem, he was there 3 days. And in that 3 days, he assessed the situation individually, personally, before he really made his views and his thoughts and any plans he might have already to the leaders at that time. And therefore his decisions and his direction came as a result of careful thought. And we can see this is evidence in the thoughtful way in which he rebuilt the gates of the city. We read in Nehemiah chapter 3 verse 1, "Then Eliashib the high priest rose up with his brethren, the priests, and built the sheep gate." And this is the first thing that Nehemiah mentions, the sheep gate. And they consecrated it and hung its doors. They built as far as the Tower of the Hundred and consecrated it then as far as the Tower of Haniel. And then if you turn with me to the end of the chapter, to verse 31. "And after him Malchijah, one of the goldsmiths, made repairs as far as the house of Nethinim, and of the merchants in front of the Mifgad gate, and as far as the upper room at the corner, and between the upper room at the corner, as far as the sheep gate, the goldsmith and the merchants made repair." Now, in Nehemiah's testimony, and in his planning, they started with the sheep gate, and this was also known as the gate of sacrifice. And the last gate that Nehemiah mentions for repair is the Mifgad gate, and that is known as the gate of registration, of accountability. So Nehemiah knew that God calls his people to sacrificial service to give the best for the Lord. And for this call, we will one day have to give an account. So there is sacrificial service and there is a registration at the end of an accountability of the events surrounding the rebuilding of the gates of the walls of Jerusalem. There are other aspects we could bring out as respect to the sheep gate, but I just focus on that at the moment because we're thinking about Nehemiah as the thoughtful man, as a man that inspires service, a man that inspires people to service. And the third point I would like to make on the Nehemiah's wisdom is that he was a practical man. A practical man. Now Nehemiah, we have seen, was undoubtedly a spiritually minded man, but such a spiritual mind actually made him also a very practical man. He understood the value of God's providence. He was ready to respond to every opportunity of serving God practically. And this is evidence in the manner in which his mind was working and was ready to respond to the ready to give to the king the practical requirements of his mission to Jerusalem. He had thought about this, and when the king asked what he wanted, he presented the needs to the king. He had a good, already had a thoughtful and practical response to the king. So when the king asked him what his request, he prayed, and then he stated his need, after which he was able to record, "And the king granted me according to the good hand of my God that was upon me." The point being that he was alert, he was ready for a God-given opportunity to present the practical needs. So there and then, he was able to give a full and concise business-like account of the timing and practical needs for the mission. So the thoughtful man was a practical man, and he respected God's providential timing and provisions. And throughout the book, Nehemiah demonstrates this essential partnership in God's dealings between the spiritual and the practical. And so, as I understand, one of the lessons coming from Nehemiah's leadership is that a truly spiritual man will be an efficient man. He will redeem the time. He will understand the importance not only of God's spiritual dealings, but God's providential opportunities. That's an important thing, I believe, understand in the wisdom of Nehemiah. And the fourth thing we can see with Nehemiah is that he was a committed man, a committed man. Nehemiah had a deep sense of calling him to the work at Jerusalem. On many occasions he was challenged to give up or to compromise with the enemies of God. And the enemies were so angry because he was seeking the welfare, the well-being of the Lord's people. He was seeking the well-being of Jerusalem. And on each occasion, it is recorded that Nehemiah remained true to his God. He remained committed to his calling. He understood the significance of the work being given to him by God and the danger of distraction. Satan is so deceitful, dear friends. You know, if he can't stop us doing something, even by opposition, he will come in a different way, and he will distract us. He will distract us in other ways and hinder us. But I want us to see three ways in which Nehemiah showed his commitment. When facing deceit, if you look at chapter 6 and verse 3, you will see how Nehemiah dealt with the problem of deceit. Nehemiah chapter 6 verse 3 to 4. Sanballat and Tobiah and Geshem the Arab and the rest of the enemies, they heard that I had rebuilt the wall, that there were no breaks left in it, though at that time I had not hung the walls and the gates. And verse 2 said, then Sanballat and Geshem sent to me saying, come, let us meet together among the villages in the plain of Ono. But they thought to do me harm. And this is his response, the committed man's response. So I sent messengers to them saying, I am doing a great work so that I cannot come down. Why should the work cease while I leave it and go down to you? But they sent me this message four times and I answered them in the same manner. And so the opposition goes on. But the point I'm trying to make here is that he understood that what he was doing was a great work. He had a respect for this great work. This was the priority. He couldn't come down from this work. And why should God's work cease in any case? That he can go and chat to people who are actually opposed to God's people. And one of the ways in which Satan hinders the work of the church, he will want us to have endless debates about non-essential items. Things will arise that will disturb churches, and they're not really essential items at all. They're not really essential to the needs of the gospel. But people want to talk about them, debate them, and have conferences about them. And all the while they're going to the conferences and debating and writing books about all these issues which are non-essential to the gospel, they're not preaching the gospel. They're not serving the Lord in the gospel. So Satan, through deceit, and he does it so reasonably. Three men said, let's meet together. Let's meet together. Let's have a chat. But he understood that their motives were not pure. They wanted to do him harm. Now, here's another test of our commitment. In chapter 6, verse 8, if we move on to chapter 6, verse 8, just moving down the chapter to verse 8. Chapter 6 verse 8. So we had chapter 6 verses 3 to 4. And now chapter 6 verse 8. They had sent a letter. And it is reported among the nations. And Geshem says that you and the Jews plan to rebel. Therefore, according to these rumors, you are rebuilding the wall that you may be their king. You have also appointed prophets to proclaim concerning you at Jerusalem, saying, there is a king in Judah. Now these matters will be reported to the king. So come, therefore, and let us consult together. And this is how Nehemiah responded. Then I said to him, saying, No such things as you say are being done, but you invent them in your own heart. They were all trying to make us afraid, saying, Their hands will be weakened in the work, and it will not be done. Now therefore, O God, strengthen my hands. So Nehemiah responded firmly, truthfully, courageously. When facing deceit, when facing slander, he would not be moved. And then, if we move on to verse 11, they're tempting him to come and meet in the temple. Because they say, people are coming to kill you, Nehemiah. Indeed, at night they will come to kill you. In verse 11, and I said, Should such a man as I flee? And who is there such as I who would go into the temple to save his life? I will not go in. So Nehemiah refused to meet with his enemies. He refused to be put off by slander. He refused to misuse the house of God. He refused to be detracted from commitment to the work of the Lord. Now we live in a culture, friends, where such firmness and intolerance is regarded as society's greatest enemy. Nevertheless, we are called by God to be like Nehemiah, to stand resolutely on the walls and not come down from the great work to compromise with evil and error. But then in Nehemiah's wisdom, he was a focused man. He was a focused man. Nehemiah was wise to the attempt of Satan. He understood that Satan's purpose was to distract him from the work. He understood his responsibility to discern and resist distractions, knowing Satan's use of them to delay the Lord's work. And there is a great lesson in Nehemiah's statement that we've read. I am doing a great work. I cannot come down. Friends, you may be a member of this church, and the greatest work God has given you to do is to be a praying member of the church, to be a person that's going to be praying in the secret place, to uphold in the church in prayer, and the pastor and the ministries. And it's not a public work. People don't see it very much. And if you have this same attitude of Nehemiah, I'm doing a great work, and I cannot come down. I must be committed. I must be focused to prayer. And as a church, if we understand we're doing a great work, and we have a respect for this work, for the ministry, for the preaching, for the outreach, for the reaching out to the people with the gospel, and we respect this as a great work, we really understand it's a great work, we'll understand we cannot come down from this. We must press on. We must keep doing. We must keep serving the Lord in whatever God has called us to do in our own testimonies, in our own personal testimony and witnessing. Brothers and sisters, press on. Nehemiah understood the significance of his work. It was a work for the Lord. And it's great in its potential. It's great in its purpose. Any work for the Lord, any work you're doing for the Lord, it might seem so small to you, but it's got tremendous potential. You know, I've known people who have been saved through someone just handing them the Gospel of Matthew. That's all they've done. They hadn't got a gift to speak too much, but they had a heart for the Lord and a heart for the lost, and they would carry Gospels around with them, and they would, in this particular case, the Gospel of Matthew was handed to a person. And this person read the Gospel of Matthew, and the Lord blessed the reading of the Gospel of Matthew. That little act of handing out a gospel, seemingly little act, was actually a great work. And we stand on the top of the drive from time to time and hand out gospels or hand out New Testaments, for example, and perhaps only five people take them in an hour. the potential of a person having a New Testament in their hand is eternal. It's eternal. They could change them. If the Lord was pleased to bless the word to their souls and apply it with power, he's going to change their life for all eternity, because it will inevitably lead them to Christ. Focused man. And then Nehemiah was an assured man. An assured man. In his wisdom, he was assured. The wisdom of Nehemiah was evidenced by his faith and assurance in God. It was consistent wherever and whatever. And various statements in his account confirm this to us and encourage us to remember that assured faith in God is a vital tool in leadership. Because if the leader isn't really confident in the word of God, and if the leader is got struggling with issues about the greatness and the majesty and the sovereignty and the wisdom of God, how can you expect this this will pass on through to the congregation? But if we're like Nehemiah and we're established, and the Lord is good, the Lord is true, the Lord is right and perfect in all his ways, this will come across, and it did with Nehemiah in his testimony. And he understood that assured faith in God is a vital tool in leadership as a means of encouraging assurance in others. So, for example, when he makes a strong statement to rebuke his enemies, Sanballat, Tobiah, and Geshem, and he says to them, "The God of heaven will prosper us." That's what the people heard. That's what the people centered around. They didn't center around Nehemiah. They centered around what Nehemiah said. And Nehemiah said, "By faith, the God of heaven will prosper us." Who are these three men against the God of heaven? And then later he makes a rallying call when the people are in fear and they're fearful of the enemies and they're surrounding and they begin to become weak and trembling. And this is what Nehemiah says. He says, "Our God shall fight for us." He doesn't say, "Look to me. I'll be your leader. I'll be your inspiration." His inspiration was God, and he says, "Our God shall fight for us." You notice he uses the plural, "our God," inclusive, with the people. So Nehemiah's faith was centered upon the objective reality of God, and it was firmly based upon what God had revealed about himself in his word. So Nehemiah's wisdom is evident in his testimony of thoughtfulness, of prayerfulness, of faith, of dependence, of his commitment and assurance. And such a man could be used by God to manage a huge project and manage people effectively. We're going to move on in our next study to see how Nehemiah's management of people and the project that he managed was really an incredible lesson, even for today, for people in the area of management. And there were three aspects of his management. There were three aspects of how he managed the project, how he managed people. And we will see there was Nehemiah's motivation, there was Nehemiah's organization, and there was Nehemiah's discipline. And those three principles of management: motivation, organization, discipline. And we will see it in our next study, God willing, in the management of Nehemiah. So he was a spiritually minded man, but he was a practically minded man. He was a man that God could use. So we'll leave it at this point this evening, and God willing, next week we will move on to Nehemiah's motivation.